Joa, funny thing just happened. Now, and when I was thinking about what to share this morning, I was talking to Mike about three options I could share, and literally, the option I didn't choose was the passage that was just read out. I'm saying this was the passage, snakes on a pole, Moses, you know? And the reason I was going to share that, which I thought I could save from my computer and have a crack at it now if we wanted, it might seem very fitting after that talk, was because last time I spoke here with you all, I talked about vulnerability and what it means to step in and live out of the space of vulnerability. And we talked about Moses, you know, and Moses and the burning bush. And who remembers? And for those of you who don't, man, you should listen to that. It's a good place to live out of. Firstly, but I should say, hi, my name's Blue. And it's good to be here. For those of you who don't know me, friend of Mike and Rachel's, and every now and then people let me have a crack at talking. So I just want to honour the life that you've lived and the example that you are. It's really incredible, and a lot of the wording that you chose to use today was very crafted in terms of pulling us to the mission and the activity of God. Yeah. So that's kind of what I want to talk about this morning. Actually, is like I talked about the place of vulnerability because if you remember, I was standing on a corner in San Diego and I felt that God was unraveling the scriptures for me, and so I wrote it down, and that was a fresh talk that I had written because I was in it. This morning, I'm in another fresh sort of expression, and I wanted to share that journey with you. But in order to do that, I'm going to start at the beginning of the statement I made on your brochures, which is, we are the church, we don't go to church. And I want to unpack that a little bit in my story. So years ago, I trained. Is this echoey? Is this fine? You're all good? All right. Stand back a bit. Stand back here. You just don't want me spitting on you, do you? Yeah? I know, yeah. Yeah. Do I need to be up here, or am I right down here? All right. So I have a panel beating background, trade background, left school when I was 15, dyslexic as, and one of the last least and the lost, and a youth group leader came and grabbed me, shook me around a bit, and taught me how to actually be a responsible citizen. My wife's taken on that mantle now, and we're still on the lesson. And so I left my job, and I went to work, and this is where I met Michael and Rachel. I went to work in the more marginalized areas of Wellington City and ran youth groups for young marginalized kids. And then one day, I felt this holy discontent to study, and who wants to do that? Like, in Auckland, of all places, I was trained to hate Auckland, you know, the rest of the country, anything south of the Bombays, and there I was, quite happy in my sort of stance on anti-Auckland, anti-study. And there I find myself training to be a pastor, and I'm thinking, no, Lord, why would you do that to me? My kids will end up hating me. Everybody will think I'm wrong, and I'll be responsible for everything. Why are you doing this to me? And it was really confusing for my first year. But in my first year, I felt the Lord saying, you're going to be a different sort of pastor. And I thought, oh, I know what that means. No pay, right? Yeah. True story. And I thought, well, what does it mean to be a different sort of pastor? And when I sat in the classes and I was reading theology and I was learning theology, I had a background of trade and drug den. My boss was a drug dealer, and I was brought in a panel beating thing. There's lots of gangs involved in it. And I was looking and reading in class about how does this work in the real world, the world that I was in, the world that I lived and breathed. I wasn't a part of the gang. I wasn't growing the drugs. I was just part of the world that was in. But faith had to actually work. It had to be real in those places. And I just felt like, what would happen if we got rid of the pews, the pulpit, the sermons every week, that we don't need them? The paid positions, the building, the structures, the heaters, the carpet. What would happen if we got rid of it all? And my friends would say, man, what are you going to do if you don't have those things? I said, I have no idea, but I feel that's where God's calling me. Because we are the church, we don't go to church. If we get rid of all the stuff, what we're left with, each other, the people. That was always what the church was. And so I think sometimes our language betrays us that we go to church, we're going to church for this time, this event, this thing. Now, I want to declare, I am not anti that. We need our memory. We need our shared memory. We need the things that point to where we have been and what God has done. We need to know our folklore. We need to open the scriptures together. We need to gather. But when we put more time and effort into our gathered than we do in our when we're not around, we sometimes get the balance wrong and something can go awry. Our language changes and we become Christian language to people. And our activities change, so we gather around each other all the time and we don't necessarily have any space for the other. Yeah. And what can happen is pretty soon we get basically afraid to go into spaces that we don't belong into because where we belong is in the church or in the church family. And there's nothing wrong with the church family, but it's just that when we have this thing called the light that we're supposed to be bearers of and we all hang out together, man, it's a bright place. But we're supposed to be light bearers in dark situations. We're supposed to be light bearers in areas of darkness. And so it doesn't make sense that we gather like this. I'll give you some examples of this. I was talking with a friend one night, him and his wife, and I said, I'll come around for dinner the next day. The next day, he comes around, and I come around to his place, and they said, look, we've been up all night with the scriptures, and we're quite disturbed. We are quite upset. We don't know what to make of this. And I said, great, let me give you a little Kodak moment. Kodak moment is a little snapshot of what's going on here right now. And I said, you've been in this area how long? And 14 years. In this house, 14 years. Going to the same church, 14 years. I said, excellent. Now, you're a bright man. You have a very important job, you know. I'm surprised you hang out with me. But you're a bright man, very well educated. And so you've done your men's breakfast, your seasons on the eldership. You've done your working bees. You've run lots of home groups in that time. And that's you, because your job is really important. Takes a lot of your time. He goes, absolutely. And I said to his wife, you've got a double degree, homeschooling the kids, ultra bright, homeschool, mops, manly music, all the things, the craft markets, the retreats, and the home group, and that's you done. And she goes, pretty much. Oh, and a worship team, yep. Don't forget the worship team. And I said, fantastic. Absolutely loving the church and as part, you know, being part of the fabric of the church. Right, fill my hand up. I've only got 5 digits on my hand, by the way. Fill my hand up with the amount of people that you have had from your community that you live into your house for dinner after living there for 14 years. Not one. I said, okay. Fill my hand up with the amount of neighbors that you know in your community by their first name. Not one. And I burst into tears. I'm still upset by it. I'm upset that we can gather in places like this and then have no energy, nothing left in the tank for the neighbours that we live among when we're supposed to be light bearers. But we have fooled ourselves into going to church rather than being the church. And sometimes we gather. It's important to gather. I'm not anti the gathering. But when the gathering over or supersedes the rest of the things that we do in our lives, I think we get the balance wrong and we start to get this weird language. I was listening to national radio once, I never did it again, and I was driving down the country and there was no other radio stations that I can listen to. And I heard Michael Laws talking about this young couple, and he had come out of prison and it was her third or fourth kid that had been taken off her by SIPs and stuff like that. And he was saying, we need to sterilize them as a couple and all that sort of stuff, and it got me going and that. And so I got on the side of the road on a cell phone. It used to cost $2.40 a minute, and I had a 45 minute wait before I got on to radio, and I said, Michael, you've been a bit of an egg, mate. Surely in a society that goes into their driveway internally, into their garage and goes into their house and has their gates and all that sort of stuff, surely their neighbours could have seen something. Surely their neighbours could have walked alongside this young woman and this young gentleman. He says, are you saying that it's my responsibility? I'm saying, no, I'm saying you have a responsibility, as we all do. And if society just looked towards its neighbours next door, it would all change. And then he started talking about the Nazis and rah, rah, rah. And I called him an egg. I didn't call him an egg. I called him a stronger language than an egg. However, here's the interesting thing. For the next hour, the radio station was split. People rang up and they said, I love what that guy Blue said, and they went off on their tangent or whatever. Or, I hated what that guy Blue said, And they were just, now these guys gave a stronger argument, the guys who hated what Blue said. The guys who loved what Blue said were Christians. Do you know how I knew they were Christians? Because they ran out of words. I could see the words ending in their sentences. They ran out of words because they didn't have any non-Christian words, normal words, normal language to describe the Christian values that they had. They had not done their work. They were not transitioning into community language. They had church language and it wouldn't fly. And so I thought at that point there, I am going to give the rest of my life to creating good language around deeply spiritual principles that we believe in, that we live out. But actually, as light bearers, I need to pull down, break down, be alongside those who don't go to this, because they will never come into here, but they will often just happen upon in the streets in life. Segway. I'm in a cafe the other day, and I could see this guy with tattoos all over his face, and I thought, you look out of place. You look uncomfortable. I'm just gonna sit and talk with you. And I just pretend to text as he's doing life. His partner's not looking anywhere, and I'm thinking, yeah, there's big problems here. And then he goes, oh, bro, how you going? I say, yeah, okay. What's happening? You live around here? We've got a street party coming up soon. He goes, oh, great. And he just looks at me, and he says, no, I've done nothing. I've just been present. That's all. I just positioned myself in proximity. And he said, I'm a violent man. I have deep anger issues. I just got out of jail. I need help. I said, wow, I also have been a violent man. And I had massive anger issues. There's some deep things that I could share with you and help you along your path. And we talked for quite a while. And he said at the end of that time, who would have thought that I would have got up this morning and met a man like you, and that you would say these words to me? This has been a good day. I need to go to my parole officer now. And he got in his car and he walked away. And he drove away. And then some other guy who was just at the table, because we're at the community table, leans in and goes, bro, are you a counsellor? And I said, no, I just drink coffee and I know stuff. What do you got? You know? That's this week, you know, sort of. Anyway, I digress. So, with this newfound theological degree and all this sort of stuff, I'm supposed to be a pastor, but I didn't want to be a pastor of a normal church like this. I wanted to go into areas and forge out some other ways of being the church. And so we met up with a crazy couple, and about four couples. We bought a house. And Michael and Rachel being part of helping us do that. That was like crazy stuff. There was a lady, she had a community house, and it was too cool for me to live in because I come from Youth for Christ background. We are supposed to live on nothing. And we walked in this house, and this could be the place that we could actually live in community together and host community downstairs. We wanted to go into a community that was soulless, that no one wanted to belong to, because they didn't want to belong to that place. And it was called Morningside. Yeah. And so we bought this house, and I remember the day that we talked to this lady and she wanted this much, and I said, I know you want this much money for it, but I'm going to offer you this much money for it. And if we sell everything we have, I'm going to offer you this much money for it. And if we sell everything we have, we'll only come up with this much money for it. So we've got a shortfall of literally hundreds of thousands of dollars. 11 years ago, that was a very big deal for us. And she said, I know you're not a Christian, but I am, and I believe God's in this. Will you take a journey with us? And she was just eyes wide open and, God, yeah, that sounds amazing. And so 3 months later, and people were very generous, and we got into this place, and we just started. And we started to belong to a neighborhood, because wherever the church is, a neighborhood should be restored. Yeah? Isn't that right? Gonna call you on that. Okay, wherever the church is, a neighborhood should be restored, reclaimed, revitalized. You know, the blind should heal, the deaf should hear. It's funny coming from God, hearing aids. People should take pride and rejoice because the church is present. And so we started getting involved in all sorts of things in the neighborhood, pub quizzes, salsa dancing night, that was awkward. We put on cooking classes for the neighborhood. There's a crack house across the road. It was 80 apartments, and the police were there every second day. Next door to us is 167 apartments, and they have single bedrooms, no kitchens, just one communal kitchen down below. And it was broken glass. We'd go on, hey kids, let's go for a walk. Bring your plastic bag, pick up the broken glass. And it was quite a dangerous sort of area. But we just started to love it. And so why we did this is when I was studying, there were two passages that jumped out at me that's really important. Otherwise, we just do stuff, right? And here's the passages I want to read. 1 John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God, and all things came into being through him. And without him, not one thing came into being. And what has come into being in him was life. And the life was the light of all the people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. And the Word became flesh and moved into the neighborhood. Really important part of the line there. And then secondly, in 1 John 4, 7, beloved, let us love one another, because love is from God. Everyone who loves is born from God and knows God. Whoever does not know love does not know God, for God is love. Moving into the area was important because when I was studying, I came across a guy who thought what I thought. It's just that he got paid a lot more for it and wrote it in a book. And a guy called Stanley Grenz created For Community. And it was about this thing that we have, this relationship with God, that isn't it good that God loves us and we can connect with him in our worship and our times together? God is intimately involved in us as individuals. But that is not enough. It is not enough. And it is also great that through the love that I have in God, I can connect to the community and the world around me. And I can do great things with God. But also that is not enough if I'm not connected to the source of love. And so how this kind of works is if my relationship with the Creator is worked out the hands and feet of Christ in the world, I'm supposed to do it with you. We're supposed to go together, and that's the sort of pyramid sort of thing that Stanley Green's model created. Community, the church in action, the church gathered, and the church scattered. It's really, really important. So, we looked at ways that we can bless the community, and we opened up a little cafe. It was a really, really bad cafe. It ended with a guy with a meat cleaver throwing a meat cleaver at me. It was a great day. And I thought, this is going to end very badly, but funnily, as he threw the meat cleaver at me, he overextended it, hit the ground in front of me and bounced off. Some would say the shield of God, others would say I just dodged a bullet there. And we thought, oh, well, okay, we now have a space. We're going to run a cafe. And so I ran my first Easter camp. The next day came home, chipping up tiles off the floor. Our kids were burning paint. It looked like a little sweatshop. People were going past and wanting to report us to the police and that. Thought that we were doing some sort of P-Lab or something. I don't know. It was crazy. And so we built this little cafe, 16 seats in our little cafe called Crave. And we were like, this is awesome. We got somebody else to run it. And because we wanted to be part of the community, we had this idea that we are going to do dumb things, right? We're going to have big risks. We're going to have one value. We've got many values that we operate out of. The first value is mission is the reason church exists. And we put that front and center. We overstated it so that everything that we did was through the filter of mission. Everything in our gathering, anything in our action, anything in our living, where we lived, how we lived, was done through the filter of mission. And just so we don't get hardened with this and self-righteous and militant, the second value was love is the context of all mission. Yeah? It keeps our hearts soft and keeps us connected to the Father and each other. And so one of the other values was we punch way above our weight. Okay? We just do dumb things and we've got a great theology of failure. So quite simplified, and we knit our parachute on the way down, right? We're not going to wait for everything to line up before we do stuff. And so we just do dumb things, and there's lots and lots of examples. But one of the things that we did, we opened a cafe, we went running it, we gave all the rights to somebody else. And I'm a hunter, and I had a wild pig in the back of my car, and I thought, I'm going to cook that pig on the side of the road. I'm going to invite my neighbors over for dinner. So we ran a garage sale, hired a spit, and everybody walked past the pig, and I thought, it's time to, you know, cooked the pig, so I wheeled it out the driveway onto the road and put two cones on the roadway just to make it legit, right? And people abused me. You know, they came past and shook their fists and what the hell? Lots of rich language and then I, oh, hey, I'm blue, I live here. It's all cool. But if you walked past, you must be a local. And so I'd have a conversation with you and say, hey, blue, this is where I have coffees, where I live, it's my pig. You want to come for dinner? We're going to have dinner tonight on the street. And I just asked everybody to dinner. And at 6 o'clock, it was the time we're supposed to eat. And at 6 o'clock, there's like no one there. And I walked in with a big grin to my friend because we'd, had all this coffee ready to go, these drinks ready to go, the pig was nearly ready to go, and I walked in and we're just shaking our head and we're just both laughing at each other. We said, lock it in, mate, lock it in. This is what failure feels like. We're supposed to take these risks and now we've got to work out a plan to what to do with this pig, you know? So and it was great because we're risking together. We weren't necessarily succeeding together. We were on a journey of just attempting to be light in a dark place. And about 8 minutes past six, 80 people just came around. It was like out of this cheesy advertisement, and they all came and we're all standing around a pig, just cooking this pig on the side of the road. And there was this gay Mexican guy standing next to this big Samoan who wanted the carcass. He had a big family. He's going, man, that carcass is mine, all that sort of stuff. Next to these two Mexican students who hadn't eaten meat since they got into the country. Next to this old English couple who said, this is how we used to do the community back in the day. No, they didn't. The older they got, the better they were in it. And sort of, but the point is, everybody was together and we were celebrating. There were people crying for no reason other than just to be part of something. I remember there was an argument happened across the road with a young couple. And I said, come over. And I got them over just to get rid of the argument. I said, hey, I'm Blue. This is where I live upstairs. Here's a cafe I drink my coffee in. It's my pig. You want to come and join us for dinner? They said, we'd love to, honestly, but we can't. I said, why? They said, because we were expected somewhere else for dinner. I said, just go there and bring them all back here. And they said, that's what we're arguing about. We want to do that, but we can't because they won't understand what's happening here. What's happening here? I said, oh, I'm Blue, this is where I live, this is my pig, this is where I have coffee. Not rocket science, eh? Like literally not rocket science. And then they started to cry. I'm just thinking, wow. And I said, can I help you? And they said, we are going to this place and we don't want to go, we want to stay here. And we want to stay here because this is the most precious experience of Araha we have ever seen. We need to shake your hand and hug you. And that, people, was called a kingdom moment, where people walk past and see the activity of God and want to belong to it. I felt like I was caught up in a parable. Man caught a pig and cooked it on the side of the road and invited his neighbors to join him. What a dumb idea, right? Our dumb ideas seem to have worked and just keep on working. So, little 16-seater cafe, we blew a big hole in the wall to the room next door, we turned it into an 80-seater cafe, and then we started to have presence in the community. This was one of our many expressions that we were trying to be the church in a neighborhood, and the cafe wasn't come and just buy coffee, it was come and belong. Many, many people have sat us down and said, this is a very brilliant business strategy, that you've got. So it's not a business strategy, it's an outworking of our faith. Create spaces, be people of presence, be seen to be in the same place, and people will seek you out because they can know something about you. They witness something about you. So many, many times, because I'm present, people come in because when it's all hit the fan in their lives, who are they gonna talk to? People that they can trust, people that they can sense. You have some answers, people say, shaking their fists. Are you Christians? There's nothing around here that says Christians, but there's something different about your place. There's something different about your place. And so that was really good. We just paid it off, this mongrel few of us trying to make a dent in the world, and then this guy comes and sees us across the road, and he says he owns the forklift tire warehouse, grungy, grotty, horrible place. And he said, you need to come and be in my place. There's more sun, there's car parking. It's better. And we think, no, this is going to kill us. We can't do 15 years of fundraising. This is going to cost us a fortune. And so we sit him down and say, what are you offering? He said, if you design it, I'll build it. I thought, that's pretty cool. But he could kick us out in a few years and then he's got this cool place. And I said, yeah, but we can't afford it. And honestly, our furniture's too tired. He goes, how about I give you $100,000 towards ovens and stuff like that? I'm thinking, man, that's a bit all right. And we're thinking it might cost $200, and it cost us $400. But and then I said, your rent is just too expensive. We are non-profit. We give our profit back to the community to make this community better. We can't afford your rent. He goes, how about we tie rent to turnover? And I'm saying, dude, why do you want to do this? And here's a Buddhist guy who doesn't know us from the community. He says, I've been watching you guys for 7 years. This community is all it is because you guys moved in. Let me help you become all you can be to this community. That's outrageous. Yet again, I feel like I'm in another parable. It wasn't a church that said, hey guys, been watching you guys, and you guys are awesome. We'd like to give you a lot of money. We'd like to get behind you. Never happened. Not part of our story. Every other church became threatened. You know, you guys aren't a real church. You guys aren't a real expression. We'll call you a missional order. No, we just became a fully fledged church in the Baptist Union last week, 2 weeks ago. So we move into this place, and because we knitted our parachute on the way down there, there's just no way we can do it. One of the guys came up with a stupid idea. Let's close Craig down at 2 p.m. on a Sunday, and let's open the new one, which is 5 times bigger, the next morning. You know, so we had to move the whole cafe in a few hours. And so we thought we're never going to get it done. 100 people from the community came and actually helped us move in. Now, I heard this spoken about at a conference and somebody was in tears and I was thinking, what's the deal? See, we've got this idea that if we do something, the community's involved in everything. We just plan these things and the community come. If the community didn't come to the things that we're planning, that would be weird. But her tears were because she couldn't get anybody from the community to help them do anything because in their community, the church was so irrelevant. It was only relevant to themselves. And I thought, okay, there's something happening here. 100 people came in. So they now come to the street parties and the street parties now, they started off with 60, 80 sort of people. Now they're 1,000. We run 2 of those street parties a year. We've got lots and lots of that sort of stuff going on. It gets more. So we get a call from the Brito Mart boys, we call them, the 3 guys who developed the Brito Mart. Who knows about the Brito Mart down in Auckland Central? Yeah. They brought the rights to develop it for $35 million, and now it's $1 billion sort of dollar enterprise and stuff like that. We get the call, can we have lunch with you guys? And we think, oh, now we're in trouble. They've brought up the block and they're going to kick us out, and then we'll have to move somewhere else. And St. Heliers, you know, watch it, that's where we'll move to. Brace yourself. And at lunch they said, look, we brought the building next door. There's only 2 buildings on our street. We brought the building next door, and we're wanting to move in. And we love what you guys are doing. Yet again, this is some of the smartest ways to do business ever. A group of crazy young people, I'm the oldest in the group, who actually are part owners. Basically, if you belong to our church, you're a part owner in our cafe. And the way you guys do hospitality and the way you do story and all that sort of stuff, we want to belong to it. So what do you think we should put next door? And so that has taken months and months and months of building. And finally this week, current story now, we've just opened up a next cafe called Kind. Kind is, whereas Crave is about belonging, come belong, be that. Kind is about, and restoring humanity, Kind is about being kind to one another and the planet. And so it's mostly plant-based, it's mostly gluten-free or vegan, mostly. You can get some bacon on the side if you want to. However, it's this beautiful, aesthetically amazing place that it's going to cater to a different clientele in our neighborhood. Next to that, one of our young guys, Tim, stunning young man. He's trained as a pastor. He started brewing beer and cider, you know, for Crave, craft beer and that. And sort of, so just like the old Friars, we call him Friar Tim, you know, and we want to get him a habit. And he is a young guy, just got married, and he said, you know what, I'm going to open Auckland's first cidery. I'm going to be the barman to the neighborhood and brew this stuff, and I'm gonna connect and talk with everybody who comes down this alleyway. So there's this little alleyway, Electric Chicken, Bow Dumplings, and then this cidery down here. And he's set up for this venture. It's a massive risk, and Tim has risked much over the few short years that I've known him. Last Saturday, 2 days before we were about to open Kind and the cidery, Crave got burgled, you know, sort of down in the middle of the night, and they drove a van down in the back, and they put into the back of the van about 500 litres of Tim's cider that he needs to open up. I'm sorry for laughing, we think it's so funny. And both his brewing kits are gone, so he can't make any more cider. You know, it takes 2 weeks to brew. And here's this young 26-year-old punching his way forward, trying to be something in the community. And you know what? Because he's taken risks and he has a theology of failure, he is not saying God is not in this. He is saying, what a journey, what a ride. And he has not lost one step in his race. And he is there at night buzzing away, feeling like he's a sneak. I make this stuff and people buy it. And I'm having these conversations. It's just like, it's outrageous.
These are just stories because we're caught up in something at the moment because we're trying to plant ourselves in a community. We've got community spirit now. Our community is being restored. We still gather, don't get me wrong. We still need our journey. We still need the things and our stuff. We still gather. But we have planted ourselves in a community through rhythms and practice because we're not the church. We don't go to it. We are the church, sorry. We don't go to this place. So there are some rhythms that I want to encourage you with that might help you. There's some stories, but they came from rhythms. And the rhythm being, first one was mission. How do I engage with mission in my life and my community? We incorporated something called BELLS. BELLS is an acronym for blessing. Blessing is barak, okay? To empower, to strength. To empower, to strength. So how do you bless people? Here's a simple rhythm that we can use if we've forgotten how to use the language of normality to bring deeply spiritual principles of our faith into normal conversations. How do you bless people? Well, a blessing could be something like a word of encouragement. Not like what you've done with your hair, but like, I like what you bring to the situation. I like how you serve. I like your heart. I love this about you. It means observing people and blessing them with words of encouragement. It could be doing their lawns. It could be making them something or inviting them somewhere, helping them to belong, but encouraging them. So blessing. What would it look like for the next 2 months to bless three people a week? Just three people a week, you know? So blessing three people a week, wouldn't it be great if they were people who aren't part of your Christian family? Just in your community, your neighbors. Just bless them. Be a blessing, you know? The second part of BELLS is E. The E part is eating. Eating with people changes everything. Have you ever realized that? We can be prim and proper at our business meetings and that, but as soon as we're at the table, we belong, you know? The table conversations are very different from the business conversations because I'm not all that. I can't be because I've got to eat just like you. So we're talking about different things when we're at the table. What would it look like to eat with three people that aren't part of this? In your communities, it might even be as simply as a coffee. But what would it look like for once a fortnight, actually, to invite a neighbor over for dinner? Is that weird? Is it? No. The L in BELLS is listening. Other than your quiet times, where are you going to sit and listen to the activity of God, the voice of God? Is there a podcast that you need to listen to? Is there a park bench that you need to just put yourself in so that you can be present? Listen three times a week. The other L is learning. What are you learning other than your quiet times? What are you learning about your community? What are you learning about its history? What are you learning about the people who dwelt here? What are you learning about the needs in your community? What are you learning? And so out of your blessing and your eating and your listening and your learning, the S in BELLS is listening to the activity of God. Where do you feel sent? The story that you told before about going to the hospital is a classic story of being sent, being that sent one into, I don't know why I'm here. I don't know why I need to go and talk to that person. I don't know why I need to just stand and be present, you know, and available. But God is doing something that you can't see out of your blessing and your eating. And you're listening and you're learning, there's a sentness, yeah? There's another concept to actually engage with the community that's really, really simple. Whenever I drive through a community, I love driving through a community, I can learn something about that community, it's awesome. But when I ride my bike through a community, things are a bit slower, I have to look and focus on where I'm going, of course, but things are slower than driving through a community. But I can observe things differently than I can when I'm driving. But when I walk through a community, actually everything slows down. When I walk through a community, I smell smells, I observe things, I see people, and I give it that brilliant strategic evangelistic sort of method that I can do. It's called, yeah? We all know what that means. And doing that makes us human, actually. There's a point of connection, the hairy eyebrow, you know? Honestly, can bring worlds together. And sort of saying hello isn't an evangelistic strategy, it's just being human, it's being kind, yeah. So What I'm not trying to do is create a program, because programs actually replace realities in our life that we're not living, right? So we do evangelistic programs. I'm not trying to give you a program. I'm just trying to give you a rhythm in life, a rhythm of hospitality, of acknowledging. So slowing down, you will see flowers. You will see trees. You will see the environment that is our community that needs to be restored, not just the people. You will see people that you walk past all the time. You will see people of interest. You will see into people's gardens themselves, into their front yards, and you will take time and you will be known. And by doing that and by being present, by walking God's speed, 5 Ks an hour, 3 miles an hour it's called, because that's how Jesus walked, right? He walked everywhere, he didn't fly, he didn't. He walked, and as he walked, he encountered humanity, he encountered community. And this is what we should be, the church in action, scattered. Now, so I'll leave you with one last thing, because I know we've had a lot on this morning. Whenever the church gets together, the most relevant thing in the universe is the Spirit of God, and the most creative thing in the universe is the Spirit of God, when the Spirit of God who dwells in us is outworked in a community of darkness, because we belong to one another, yeah? And we dare to punch above our weight. We dare to put ourselves out there in ways that aren't weird, but just because we live in the communities, we are part of the communities, then something happens. I think over time, God plays knock knock. You know the game knock knock? You know? Who's there? Imagine that. And the people that you're connecting with, the people that you're actually hairy eyebrow, park bench, seeking you out for your opinion because you can be trusted, he plays knock knock. Knock knock. Who's there? God. God who? Imagine this, because of their encounters with you, because of the intrigue, that God actually reveals himself to people because they have encountered the God in you. I am the God of, in the old days he used to say, I am the God of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob. And they say, oh, I know Isaac, Abraham. I know Isaac, I know Jacob. You're their God. Yeah. Imagine if he says, I am the God of Ella. Yeah. To your friends. I'm the God of, turn to your person and you're right. Imagine, oh, you're the God of them. That what makes them so special. Yes. Because this is what God does in the soil of our soul. He knocks in the quiet of our nights when we're hitting stuff, right? And he seeks us out. Who's going to be the God of what? To the people who have need in our communities. Last story. I'm sitting in the cafe one day and I'm absolutely hammered. I am so tired. We are just exhausted continuously. And I'm dressed up in painting clothes and ripped things and I feel horrible, but I need a coffee, and I go over it and the place is cranking. And I'm thinking, oh, I don't want it to be cranking today. I just want to talk to somebody that I know. I don't want to, you know. And I can hardly get a space in there. And then downstairs, we've got this ethical craft market happening. And so in the ethical craft market, it is pumping down here. And this guy comes up to me, literally. And he said, bro, like your tattoo. I said, oh. True. Yeah, it's good, eh? He said, where the bathrooms in it? And he said, over there. Okay, fun. And I carry on thinking, that's a bit weird, you know? And then I go downstairs and I go to the craft market and this guy's following me. And I could see him at the door and I'm thinking, oh man, I've still got game. You know, sort of like that. I'm thinking, are you going to hit on me? I'm not sure you are, because you look really excellent, you know, presented, and I'm in my painting clothes and that. And he makes his way up to me. And sure enough, this guy's gay. And he comes right up to me and he wants to talk. He goes, mate, this is outrageous. I said, yeah, it is. And he goes, are you local? Have you seen this before? He goes, and he just gives me this, you know, that look, like the other guy at the table did, this look. He goes, okay, I'm going to tell you. I'm a spiritualist. I'm a designer. I design art in the form of shirts. And I was looking at my shirt and I was looking at his shirt. These shirts are $500 and he's just been on some catwalk thing and all that sort of stuff. And he's just, and I'm, and he says, and I've just finished my yoga session around the corner and I'm driving past the cafe. And as I drive past the cafe, there is light screaming out of this place. I mean, there's this light, there's this energy. I'm all about the energy, you know. He's some crystal gazing, yoga-oriented person, like, and he's just like this light. He says, I have to pull over. I have to find out what the energy is. And so I pull over to the road, and I'm in there, and the place is going off. There's energy everywhere. It's up here. I'm upstairs. I'm on the stage. It's just full of energy. He said, and then you walk in, you know. And remember, I'm tired, I'm grumpy, less God, not more, I'm just tired, I need a break. And he says, and then when I look at you, the same, you are radiating the same energy that is full of this place. What's the energy? And I said, oh, I think that's the presence of God, you know. And so I want to tell you about who God is, and in a way that wasn't making him feel less. I wanted to talk about the God who restores us to our fullness of humanity, the God who wants to be part of us, in us, alongside us, around us. You know, I want to talk about the kingdom that we experience, God's kingdom in our community that we partner with because we see what the Spirit of God's doing and we join him in that way. I want to pull him to a better version of who he could be, a more full version with God. And he's just like crying and he's talking to me, we're just hugging and there's this thing that happened. Now, I wish I could say that he fell on his knees and there was a blinding light and all that sort of stuff. That's not how it goes most of the time. My point is that when you are seeking to God, I actually said to my wife, man, when I'm tired and I'm looking grouchy and all that sort of stuff, man, I've still got the energy, you know? I've still got it. And she just laughed. I said, no. The humbling thing about it was that when I'm tired and I'm grouchy and I think like I've had enough, God's purposes still are revealed through us regardless. And that is incredible. Just saying, we don't go to church, people, do we? We are the church. And if we lose sight of that, we'll morph this into something that's weird, with a weird language. And we'll turn it into a museum of things of the past that we don't recognize anymore. They're supposed to inspire us. This place is supposed to inspire us to be all we can be in the rest of our lives, not just here. What we have here is so important. It is so important. But it's not more important as the rest of being the church for the rest of our lives and in the rest of our weeks. Amen? Yeah. I'll just pray, eh? Oh, Lord, help them. May you disturb them in their dreams. May you give them dreams of a community that they live in. May you quicken to their thinking. Individuals who need conversations. Individuals who need to belong, who need to be healed within themselves. May you help them to be generous with their homes. And maybe their homes be a place where light shines in the darkness on a community that is desperate for you. Amen.